Hello, everybody. Welcome. This is Justin and Lizzie from Third Space. We are here again for Turning Towards Life. This is a slightly different deal with Turning Towards Life because normally we say we're here live. It's Sunday morning. It's 9 a.m. And we're not here live. And it's not Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And we have pre-recorded this. We are pre-recording this episode as a bonus or as a safety net because Lizzie, we haven't talked about this at all at any point in Turning Towards Life, but Lizzie, you are pregnant and nearing the end of this pregnancy. So there is a baby due, who knows when, coming soon. And we've realized that that might well, probably will, interrupt our unbroken stream of episodes of conversations that we've been having all this time. So here we are, taking preemptive action.
Yeah.
So if you're watching this, we're really, really pleased that you're with us. And although we're not live, this is just the same as always. And we've got a source that we're really excited about reading about. And we're going to, in a moment, dive in.
We are. And actually, this is a source that's very relevant. Anyway, for me, becoming a mum and being in this inquiry of how on earth I'm going to have a heart that is big enough to tolerate what happens by being a mum and welcoming another being into the world on the outside of my body. So this is a really beautiful thing that my sister wrote, and it feels very relevant and important, and also honouring of our friend who died. And it's a long time ago now that she died. It's 6 years ago that she died. So it's a big thing to remember this around this time of year. She died at the beginning of September in 2013. And my sister wrote this blog about this wonderful woman. And I felt like it was a great way to honour her and also be true to the process that I'm in and talk about this with you, Justin, as well. So I'm going to read and then you can choose what you read as well.
Before you read, Lizzie, I just want to say something. So it's very moving for me that we get to read a piece about Christy, who I know was special to both of us.
Yeah.
But it also seems to me entirely beautiful and appropriate to read this in the run-up to a new life coming into the world down the line of Lizzie and all who've come before you, because it's really struck me ever since Christy died how present she is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And there's a way that we're recording, you and I recording this on the same morning that we recorded our episode 104, where we talked about Joy Harjo's poem about you're everyone and everyone is you. And that seems to me the spirit of reading this piece and of what we might get into.
Yeah. So here we go. This is a blog post by Holly Holden, who's my sister and a very good friend of Justin's as well. So her title for the blog is What We're Really Scared Of, The Love, Beauty and Sacredness of It All. This is one of those times where I just know I'm not going to be able to do full justice to all the feelings, thoughts, sensations and openings going on inside and around me at the moment. But I'm going to give it a go. For the last couple of days, I've been comforting my sister, whose dear friend Christy Svanemeyer was killed in Holly Park in San Francisco this week. Everything about her passing has affected me very deeply. The bare facts are that she was sunbathing in the park with her 11-month-old daughter and their beloved dog. A maintenance van took a shortcut through the grass and hit her so hard that she was pronounced dead by the time she arrived at the hospital. She was the same age as me and living and parenting in a very similar way. We could have been friends had we lived in the same city. What has touched me so deeply is Christy's openness and vulnerability in how she loved. And honestly, the way she died is a playing out of one of my deepest fears, which is now surfacing more fully, of leaving behind the people I love, especially my children. And honestly, it could happen to any of us at any moment. Such is the brutal nature of being in the world with attachments to others. And attached I am these days. This morning, the three of us went to a cafe to draw pictures and read the newspaper. We had the sweetest time and I spent most of it breathing through the urge to sob uncontrollably at the beauty of Beau's legs, swinging in her Wellington boots, her tongue curled in concentration as she drew a ballet dancer, and the hairs on Christopher's head that like to live independently of all the others and stick straight up in the air. Every bit of them is so alive and so precious, and I realise that when I sit still for a while and take in all the preciousness, it's hard to breathe. This is why I get grumpy and distracted and busy. This is why I avoid such deep vulnerability at all costs. It's why we all do. Because to sit still and drink in the love and sweetness that surrounds us and let our hearts really burst with it is terrifying. It's why people eat junk food and watch TV and get addicted to alcohol, drugs, sugar, shopping. It's what we're all so busy trying to avoid. And Christy's story, the story that is still unfolding in the hearts of all her family, her tiny daughter, her husband, and all those who love her, has plugged me back into my heart so fully it's blown me wide open. We need to draw the people we love nearer, smell their hair, enjoy them, drink them in. We need to let our hearts burst open with all the love and experience the simplicity and sacredness of things. Even if we can only do it for one moment a day, it's the hard way, but the only way. I feel that is what Christy has taught me, and I wanted to pass that on. I hope I've got close to doing it even the tiniest bit of justice here.
My goodness. So beautiful to hear you read this, Lizzie, and to feel Christy come through Holly, come through you, to all of us. I'm going to read the second part. We had the sweetest time, and I spent most of it breathing through the urge to sob uncontrollably at the beauty of Beau's legs swinging in her Wellington boots, her tongue curled in concentration as she drew a ballet dancer, and the hairs on Christopher's head that like to live independently of all the others and stick straight up in the air. Every bit of them is so alive and so precious, and I realise that when I sit for a while and take in all the preciousness, it's hard to breathe. That's why I get grumpy and distracted and busy. This is why I avoid such deep vulnerability at all costs. It's why we all do. Because to sit still and drink in the love and sweetness that surrounds us and to let our hearts really burst with it is terrifying. It's why people eat junk food and watch TV and get addicted to alcohol, drugs, sugar, shopping. It's what we're all so busy trying to avoid. And Christy's story, the story that is still unfolding in the hearts of all her family, her tiny daughter, her husband, and all those who love her, has plugged me back into my heart so fully. It has blown me wide open. We need to draw the people we love nearer, smell their hair, enjoy them, drink them in. We need to let our hearts burst open with all the love and experience the simplicity and sacredness of things, even if we can only do it for one moment a day. It's the hard way, but it's the only way. I feel that is what Christy has taught me, and I wanted to pass that on. I hope I have got close to doing it, even the tiniest bit of justice here.
My chest actually aches in the reading of it and the feeling of it. And it's so beautiful to, as you say, Justin, feel the, I don't know what the word is, the inheritance or the legacy or the still here-ness of the way that Christy lived, and that we are in some way living on with that Christiness coming through us and being an inspiration and like a living connection into how she was being a mother, learning to be a mother. And the way my sister writes as well about Beau's swinging legs and Christopher's hair is such an invitation to see much more than our hearts can ordinarily handle seeing. And like she says, it's the hard way and it's the only way. Like, it's the only way, but it's really brutal. And all of this, being a human being and loving people and being attached to them, is really frightening. And so in response to that, of course, we do all the things to avoid and deny and control and push away and all those things born of being so frightened. And yet it leaves us with some kind of half-life, and everyone around us with some kind of half-life, if that's all we get up to, because we just live inside of that. It's like terror and love are so close together.
Right.
But there's like this kind of paper-thin divide between them, and that they belong so close together, and to be terrified is to be close to how much we love. And that they're kind of indivisible, weirdly. And it's really hard to tolerate how much I love and how much we love and how much love is it means so much to us.
I really love what you say, Lizzie, about, and what Holly says, the gift. I'm really caught up in the gift of multiple people here.
Yeah.
All coming through in one go. Because then this is how Christy lived too, which is that Holly's words remind us that the self-protective thing that we often do, and that we can often do with people that we love the most, is to pretend like everything's fine when we're bursting open.
Yeah.
We think that the model of a good, I know, good friendship or something is that to be able to say how great everything is and how well everything's going and everything. Which really obscures how savage life is, as well as how beautiful it is all at the same time. And I think we really need to, our hearts long for, ache for the realness of being able to say to one another how much it hurts to love.
Yeah.
Like you say, how close terror and love are together. And our strategy, that's one of the way I want to say it, is our strategy of pulling up, contracting away from that and going, oh, everything's fine, and then not letting ourselves feel. I felt my heart just bursting in smiles at the way Holly writes about Christopher's hair, that all the hairs are independent of one another in the way they stick up on his head.
Yeah.
At that time. Oh my goodness, how beautiful the world is and how much there is to love, and that we'll lose it all is unbearable and also unavoidable. And so easy for us, as Holly writes so beautifully, to in a way, the stark way of saying it is, let me get the losing done now by not really ever letting myself be in that close. Yeah. And I'll just distract myself, and I'll kind of get it over with, in a way. Which never works, because we never really do. We never do get it over with. And then we're also vulnerable to our own numbing and distraction. We're also vulnerable to being fed ways to move away.
Yeah.
And it is so kind of Holly to say, we have to do this. We have to let ourselves feel, you know, to smell the hair of our children, or to hold someone we love close, or look in their eyes, or just watch them. You know, just watch your partner go about something in the kitchen, or...
Yeah.
We have to let ourselves do this if we want a chance to be in our lives. And it's really hard. And the kind thing that Holly says is, even if you can only manage a glimpse of it once a day, that's the work, not to imagine that we can live in this all the time. Because for most of us, we have bodies that, you know, kind of contract. I'm for a long time been very touched by the idea, which I think came to us through down the line from Norman Fisher, Lizzie, whose work we talked about before, who says that when someone dies, the thing to do is to commit to living in life in a way that they would have lived, like to carry some value or quality with them through into their life. And one of the things I remember about Christy was her fierce, unflinching. Like, she would look in this direction.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad that we're looking in this direction too, and being able to say something about how close pain and love are, how close the extraordinary beauty of everything, including, of course, those who are most dear to us, with all of their messy ordinariness, humanness, how close that is to something that we would often want to avoid, and because we want to avoid it, we just try not to feel any of it. And one of the things that strikes me immediately, it's particularly touching, actually, it's just a memory is coming to me. So I'm remembering right now the last time I saw Christy and the last time I said goodbye to her, which seemed so ordinary. We were all away together, working together in the US, and she was there with her husband and with her daughter. And I remember saying goodbye. And simultaneously feeling the ordinary assuredness that we would see one another again, and also a twinge of the, but we might not. And then she died very soon afterwards. Within a couple of months, this had happened. And the reason that's coming to me right now is I was going to say, we'd better get onto this before it's too late. Because all of this pushing away how much we can love in order to save us from grief, I think that there's somehow a deal that we easily get into, which is, it's too much for me to love now, but someday I'll get to it. I'll watch TV now, or I'll tune out now, or I'll withdraw now, or I'll grump around now, because, you know, frankly, my life will go on an unbelievably long amount of time and there'll be time to set it straight. And there's no time to set it straight apart from starting to let ourselves break open to this and also receive from it now, as Christy's life. Well, as Christy's death shows us, her life shows us this too, the way she lived and what Holly writes shows us. But it's right here all the time. So it's almost like the thing we're trying to avoid is exactly the reason why there's no time to waste.
Absolutely. And it strikes me as well, Justin, there's the dynamic of, you know, everything's fine. But I know in me and other people that there's this other thing of, well, if I just keep my fear going, and you've talked about being frightened a lot, that's also another way that we practice not being in the love, in a way. And it feels like, yeah, just a really big question of how do we begin to acknowledge the love when we're feeling so afraid, and that we're in the terror part, and that the paper's stopping us from moving into the love part or acknowledging the love part as part of the dynamic. And, you know, how do I live in love, in recognition of beauty, in the recognition of Beau's legs swinging with her wellies on and Christopher's hair, and receive that when mostly I'm just feeling absolutely petrified of loss or of dying or of other people dying or of being separated physically. And somehow I feel really hopeful in the talking through with this with you, that there are practices that we can have that counter the feeling terrifiedness and the feeling afraid, which I think for me are largely to do with other human beings and these invitations to expand into more than my fear, to more than my feeling so afraid and feeling kind of paralyzed by the side of that dynamic that's the terror and the fear and the afraidness that would have me acting out all of those control patterns, or just feeling purely terrified or shutting down or denying or saying everything's okay or whatever. But to share and to be vulnerable and to be open about how we feel in our hearts about one another and start relating to ourselves as emotional people, as emotional ones who care this deeply, and recognizing and acknowledging our own care and acknowledging our own capacity to love and the way that we love, and articulating how we love, just like Holes has done here in the leg swinging and the hair. She's speaking of her love and how we can articulate that, and we can relate to ourselves as those loving, conscious, aware people that notice, noticing the small things, noticing, just like you said, watching somebody do something in the kitchen really simply. How do we become present and notice so that we can begin to receive our lives and not hold it all at bay? And it's totally understandable to hold it all at bay, and I spend ages of my life holding it all at bay, and then occasionally something in me breaks, something happens, somebody does something, I don't know what. And I feel the magnitude of this. Christy dying, I felt the magnitude of it. And when the anniversary of her death came around, and I was lying in my bed, really pregnant, wondering about how on earth to be a mum, and suddenly the recognition of what had happened was there, I could feel this whole space just blow open again. And what a beautiful thing that is, even to be able to feel that, instead of just pretend it's not going on and pretend I'm not having a baby until I really have to acknowledge it or something. And it's really big, like to cry that much, to like weep really painful tears. And I totally get why somebody wouldn't want to do that, because it hurts. Like, it really, for me, it physically hurts. It emotionally hurts. I feel like it might never end, all those things. I feel like it might have me this time and I'll just die or something. And yet, I really know how beautiful it is that I can feel. And then I could acknowledge and be in that kind of loving and that kind of acknowledgement of what's here. And on balance, I would absolutely choose the beauty and not the contraction and not the avoidance, because I know that my life is lived full rather than a quarter. And I did come to be a human because I wanted a full life. I do know that. I wanted to live. I wanted to be here properly, and I want to be here now properly and not live kind of a smidgen of life. But I'm up for it.
There are all kinds of poisonous myths and agreements we're in our culture that make this hard. I was just thinking about it was took me by surprise to think this, just as you were finishing saying what you were saying, that one of them is that that what a full life means, living fully, means going on giant adventures and achieving great things like being famous or rich or making something like changing the world or any of those kind of things, when all of which can be wonderful things, but which can easily skirt around the kind of fullness of life that you're talking about, which is feeling our lives and being in them.
Yeah.
We don't really have a public narrative about what Holly's pointing us into here and what you've just spoken about so beautifully, about really letting ourselves feel the giantness of just being alive and being with other people, even if our lives are something that doesn't fit into the sort of grand hero narrative that we have in our culture. So that's one thing. And I think that many of us, most of the time, like you say, it's too frightening to even consider really inhabiting our lives. But what else did we come for? Life is so short.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you don't have it taken brutally and unexpectedly in the middle of things like Christy did, it's still very quick. So will we take up the call, which is a kind of responsibility to step into our lives fully? Mm. And the other sort of agreement that we have in our culture that makes this hard for many of us is the agreement not to feel stuff and to let on to our messiness and brokenness, to kind of look we've made being together not only the mark of a proper life, but being together always as the mark of a proper life. So I get there are times for us to be together, there are times that we need to gather ourselves and contain ourselves, and so that we can do something, take care of something, or somehow we've made that like the universal. And so few of us have friendships where we can break open and wail and weep because of what we'll lose, or because of who we love, or because of how painful it is. I don't know if I've spoken about this with you, Lizzie, because you were there for part of it. I don't know if I've spoken about it on Turning Towards Life, but a couple of weeks ago it was my daughter Maya's bat mitzvah, which is, as you know, which is the Jewish coming of age life cycle with lots of rituals in. And there was a moment in the Saturday morning service, which Maya was leading, when she stepped away from us to do something on her own. And I could just feel myself break with love for her, and the inevitable loss, just the small loss of her moving from being a child into beginning to be an adult and stepping into her own life that's hers to live. And the reason I'm saying this now is because I could also feel so quickly the part of me that went, you have to get this together. Mm. Don't feel this. Don't feel this now. Don't feel this too much. Which is so familiar. But I think it's familiar because we've been taught it, and because we've been sold it, and because, and then we play, then the thing is, what I'm getting from what you're saying is, then we agree to this, when what is really called for there is, in order to be alive, is letting ourselves be touched by how full life is, and how we're not in charge of it, but we are in it. To not feel grief is also to not feel joy. And our demand that we feel happiness rather than joy, it seems to me that joy is a much better word, because joy includes grief, and it includes terror, and it includes our broken open. We don't have much of a narrative of joy between us. Mm. Have joy and grief be here, and that's what I hope that our taking Holly's beautiful writing and talking about Christy as a way that we get to, as you and I, feel our way, remind ourselves of this possibility, and also share it with any of you who are watching or listening. Yeah. We might together enter into being truthful with one another about what life is really like, and feeling it in our own bodies.
Absolutely. Yeah, if that's all that happens as a result of this, is there's more sharing and more feeling and more acknowledgement of what it's like to be us and to feel the way we do when we care about one another and when we love. That's an extraordinary thing. And I am really grateful to Holz for bringing this to me in the last couple of days. And grateful for this space that we have to talk about it as well, Justin. I'm noticing our time, and that we're going to be coming to an end in a second. And I just want to say I'm really grateful for everyone understanding if we have a little break in our schedule. And hopefully we'll get some of these things in the bag so that we can roll them out on a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock, and people still have their rhythm supported by us, even if I'm in the throes of God knows what. So thank you, everybody, and we will see you next week, whatever that means. And we're very grateful for this conversation and to be in this, and for your joining us in it. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Lizzie. We'll see you soon. Bye.